Yo, yo, Dr. Dre, let's crank it up, man.
Yeah.
Let's have some fun with this.
Number football for y'all tonight, people.
Let's crank it up, Rob.
College and pro, baby.
Yeah, the time is now. Talking sports with the 12th man. This is what we do. This is what we do every Tuesday. Of course, willing, and if we can get that in. Of course, I am Andre Peterson, joined by Robert Ford, and today is Tuesday, September the 10th. You guys aren't finding us for any illegal hits. That's all I'm saying. You ain't charging us, keeping it real. And without further ado, I always got to check in with my co-host, Mr. Robert Ford, on the road doing his thing. How are you doing, sir?
Man, doing great, man. You know, I had to go to D.C. today and check on those Redskins fans and follow up with them on their reactions to the game last night against the Eagles and that fast break offense. So, you know, had a lot of fun up there with the Redskins fans today.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. And we'll get a chance to definitely recap a lot of your findings up in D.C. I know Robert Griffin III, they were excited about that. We're going to talk about if you think that him not playing the playing in the preseason, Rob, had a little bit to do with his rustiness, because they got it on a little too late. And obviously the fast break offense of Chip Kelly, do we think it's going to survive? Got a lot of things to discuss, man. So once again, let's get started with that. We are going to throw out a couple of numbers if you want to get in touch with us, if you want to give us your thoughts. The number to call in to our actual show, it's 424-243-9519. That's the definite call-in number for the show. We are also available via Facebook and also Twitter. If you want to follow us on Twitter, our handle is at 12th Man Sports. That's that's 12 and THMAN Sports. You can also follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/12thmansports. If you put Talking Sports with the 12th Man, you can find us as well. So there's a lot of things to get in touch with us. Let's jump right into it. Rob is ready and I'm ready. It's NFL College. And we're going to recap kind of week one, Rob, and some interesting injury news that we'll jump right into. And the Patriots, they had their hands full with the Bills, Rob. I know they kind of lost it kind of last second there, but looks like Danny Amendola is going to be out. And then also we're going to talk about Jets and Shane Reed. They're going to talk about some short-term IR. So let's discuss the Patriots. Are they going to be okay offensively, Rob, with Danny Amendola out? I know Tom Brady was actually showing love to Wes Welker on his radio show too.
Oh, yeah. You know, I think you and I can go play wide receiver Tom Brady, and they're going to be okay offensively. That's just the way I think about it. So I think they're going to plug in some guys. I think Julian Edelman is stepping up really well at the wide receiver position for the Patriots, playing some solid football. I think you still have Steven Ridley at the running back position. They're still going to be able to hold a fourth down. So not sure how long Amendola is going to be out. I know Vereen will probably be out at least 6 or 7 weeks. But Amendola may only be out this week, so they'll get him back. He had a pretty solid game this past weekend, too, 10 catches, 104 yards, Amendola. So I think they'll still be okay. I know this is one of the games we're going to be predicting on here shortly, so I'll save my prediction. But I think offensively, like I said, you and I can go play wide receiver Brady, and they'll be just fine.
Oh man, I like your vote of confidence in our skills, Rob. That's good.
And you slow as Christmas.
No, I'm actually faster as Christmas, man. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, that's a whole other conversation. But I know I can get open, man, and flat, man. You know, if Chris Carter can play, Rob, I can play, man. You know what I'm saying? So we'll just keep moving from that. let's talk about some options here. I know we got some predictions to jump into, but what were your thoughts on the Eagles in that fast break offense? I mean, are you a fan of that? Do you think they kind of caught the Redskins off guard? I know they kind of stormed out the gates, And I'm going to do a quick little soapbox, Rob, because I'm sitting back, and I remember back in the day whenever Michael Vick first came into the league and everyone was saying that his style of quarterback play would not allow him to be successful. He'd have to be a pocket passer. And I do believe he was making strides under Andy Reid. Now, obviously, that was a rough season for Andy Reid, and you know what happened, obviously, that they brought in Chip Kelly. But now you're kind of seeing a different style. I'm not 100% quite sure that that's going to be a good trend in the league because you are exposing your quarterback to a lot of hits. You know, we've had success with the read option and all that fun stuff, but I don't think that's going to be an offense that's going to sustain because you don't want to, you know, keep letting your quarterback get hit that many times. So I know I kind of threw a lot at you. Just kind of get your thoughts as far as where you think this is going to go on and how do you think what's going to happen with the Eagles?
Well, I mean, obviously, I thought the fast break offense looked great last night. And you know, you have to give Chip Kelly some credit. There are a lot of people who didn't think it would work in the NFL. And I know, albeit it was just one game. And obviously, a lot of teams don't have a lot of film on the offense yet from the NFL standpoint. So I think, you know, what's going to happen is, my take is on it, let's give it about 4 or 5 weeks and give it a grade, see how teams are adjusting to it. And obviously, I think another aspect of the game last night, the Redskins' offense didn't help their defense at all. And I think if you really were watching that game, anybody that was watching it, really paying attention to it, the Redskins' defense got tired because the offense kept going three and out. And so I think, you know, anytime anybody's going against this Eagle team, your offense is going to have to sustain drives to make sure your defense is well-rested when they're going against that fast-break offense. And, you know, from an endurance standpoint, the first game of the season is always the toughest because most players only used to playing a quarter or two in the preseason. And then they go right jumping into playing a full game from week one. So I would say let's give it about another 4 or 5 weeks, and let's see how teams are adapted to the offense. But obviously, you have to be impressed with the way it looked last night in game one.
It's a great call. And, you know, my only question about that offense, Rob, is like, you know, right now, you know, you talk about the players there just getting, you know, through with preseason, and I'm sure that had something to do with it too. And like you said, you know, a lot of NFL teams are going to get filmed with that. They're going to figure out ways to try to expose that. So, you know, they started out the gate kind of fast. I do wonder, like, around week 8, week 7, you know, how the offense is going to hold up. And also, if you're in a situation, Rob, whenever they have, if it's bad weather or if it's kind of the cold, I mean, certain things are going to slow down that particular offense. So what's going to happen whenever you have to, you know, you definitely have to slow down the game, you know. So I'm curious as far as what adjustments are going to take place with that as well. Go ahead. I'm sorry. I don't know if you want to say something else. I thought you were talking
I was
to,
just going
to
comment on what you just said. I think that's a very valid point. I think it's a very valid point you just made about how it's going to do in the winter. So that should be very interesting. I know he ran in Oregon, but, you know, college football season typically ends in, late November, early December. So you don't get into a lot of cold weather games. That's definitely a valid point. Playing in the NFC East as well.
Yeah, we'll keep it going. The last point I want to make, too, about this, and we'll keep moving, too, is everyone was, I think, I don't know if you were watching the game, Rob, they kept saying at halftime that they were amazed that the Eagles ran about 53 plays during, you know, they just kept saying that they ran 53 plays that they ran, and they were insinuating that was a lot of number of plays. Now, near the end of the game, I think the total count was right around 77, if I'm not mistaken. And that's a pretty good amount of plays for the offense. But in comparison, I want to say the Patriots probably rattled off about 86 plays, I want to say, during last season, if I'm not mistaken. So just to kind of put things in perspective, I don't think it matters as far as how fast you're getting those people out on the field. If you're a team like the Patriots or whatever, you can still have a high amount of plays. And I think it just is more or less maybe that's a good sign of coaching or that's just a sign of knowing the personnel. And like we talk about how the Patriots have a system and they're able to kind of assimilate players that can come in. They can pull you know, a Troy Brown, or they can, you know, grab a Deion Branch and say, hey, this is your option, plug and play, and move forward with that too. So just didn't know if you wanted to comment on that too. Just, I mean, you know, everyone was kind of commenting on that, like how many number of plays that the Eagles are able to get off. But yet and still, the Patriots got just as many plays and not doing that fast-paced offense too.
Yeah, but I think once again it goes back to the standpoint where the Redskins' offense couldn't stay on the field. Their offense kept going three and out, so I think that attributed to how many plays the Eagles was able to run as well. So I think that aspect had a lot to do with how many plays. Of course, the Eagles were moving really fast, snapping the ball every 10 to 14 seconds as well, but the Redskins' offense didn't really get going, and you can clearly see the RG3 was rusty and wasn't ready to play. He didn't quite get into a groove last night until late in the third quarter, and I expected the Redskins, I know I've said this a couple of times previously on some shows previously, that I expect the Redskins to struggle starting the season just because I don't think RG3 is 100%. But I actually, you know, based on what I saw toward the end of the third quarter, it looked like he finally started getting some kind of rhythm. So maybe it won't take them four or five games to get going. I kind of thought that the Redskins wouldn't quite get going this year until week four or five. But, you know, maybe based on what I saw last night late in the third quarter, it looked like RG3 finally started to get into a little bit of rhythm.
That's a great point, Rob. And I think that that's what I was going to ask you, too. So do you think it was a good – it's kind of one of those situations where you didn't really want to play him in a meaningless football game for the preseason, but now you're kind of in the middle of the regular season, and as you mentioned, it's going to take some time for him to kind of get back his timing and get back his rhythm, and that's with anything. So, we'll talk about a lot of games we're going to recap as far as anything you want to talk about for week one, but, if you're Mike Shanahan, you know, I'm sure a lot of the Redskins fans may be, like, a little upset because, like, all right, you know, yeah, we understand that you don't want to get him hurt, but now you may cost us a little bit in the beginning because it does take some time for him to get up to speed for sure.
Well, I think Mike Shanahan still made the right decision there. I mean, you got a guy coming off major knee surgery. I would not have played him in the preseason either. And based on what I saw last night, I mean, albeit the Redskins lost the game, but it looks like RG3 started getting the rhythm here in the latter part of the third quarter, which I think is going to give him some confidence going into week two. And it may not take him as long as I thought it would be. So I think I'm going to still say that I think Shanahan made the right decision with holding him out of the preseason, even though he started rusty. I think you have to look long-term as opposed to short-term, especially with a young QB.
Very nice. Good stuff. Good stuff as always. All right, let's get into our top five, the top five power rankings. A lot of exciting games this weekend, and we'll definitely recap anything you want to talk about for week one. I'm going to make my comments about the Falcons and Saints, but let's jump right into the top five. And this can go a lot of different directions, too. I'm definitely going to go my top five is going to go with San Francisco, number one. If you saw the game, it was like a work of art. That was an excellent game they played versus the Packers, and you got to give the Packers credit too. They're going to be in my top five too, but right now I've got them top of the list. It could be like a 1A and 1B typically, but I'm going to go Denver number two. Denver looks poised, and maybe they caught Baltimore off guard, but Peyton Manning was on fire. Obviously, if you were under a rock, Peyton throws seven touchdowns. The first half, it wasn't like that, and the second half just kind of the floodgates opened up. At number three, I've got Seattle, just because of, once again, just kind of like what everything they got going for them. That's going to be a very scary team once they put it all together. Number four, the aforementioned Packers, definitely, even though they lost to San Francisco, they were definitely going tit-for-tat with them. It's a great game. And finally, I'm going to go number five and end it with, I know they didn't play as well. They made a good comeback versus the Chargers. I'm going to go with the Houston Texans. That's going to have the top five. They could definitely add a couple teams in there. But that's what I have currently right now in the top five.
Oh, I think those are some very good selections here. Mine, some similar at the top, but 3, 4, and 5 is a little different for me. I'm just going to base it on what I saw in this first week, and I know it's still early here in the season, so a lot's going to change. But I was impressed with the 49ers as well and what they did. I think Colin Kaepernick had a phenomenal game this past Sunday, and it looked like this young QB is going to get better and better. A combination of throwing and running, and this team. My fear going into the season was they weren't going to be that they wasn't going to be good enough at the receiver position. But based on what I saw Sunday, I have to change my opinion of that. I think Anquan Boldin and Vernon Davis can get it done for him as far as catching the ball, even without Michael Crabtree. So I'm going to have the 49ers at the number one spot. Number two, I agree with you as well. I have the Denver Broncos. How can you not be impressed with their performance on Thursday night? And one of my fears going into the season with them, I thought they would miss Von Miller a little bit defensively, as well as Champ Bailey getting up in age. And but obviously they were still able to dominate without those players. And there's still not a running back that's ready to grab that position by, you know, take control of the position. But, you know, there are a lot of teams that are successful right now with the running back by committee approach. And it looks like Denver is going to be okay. Well, if Peyton Manning's throwing 7 touchdowns, who needs running backs, right? So I have them at number two. Number three is where I start to have a little bit of a surprise. I was impressed with the Chicago Bears' performance over Cincinnati Bengals this past weekend. And I think, you know, when you look at this team defensively, they're still forcing turnovers, even without Lovie Smith. Tillman playing phenomenal. Defensive lines can heat on the quarterback. And now they might have a little bit of an offense with Jay Cutler, Matt Forte, Brandon Marshall. They're solid at the tight end position now. And now they have some solid offensive coaches. I think this is a, you know, real sleeper team in the NFC that you're going to have to look out for this season as well. Looks like they're going to be able to get it done on both sides of the football now, which has been a problem in the past. They haven't been able to get it done offensively. But Mark Trestman and Aaron Cromer look like they've fixed that on the offensive side of the ball. Number four, I have to go with my team, the New Orleans Saints. I think you can clearly see the impact that Sean Payton has being back on his team, bringing some stability back to the organization. And so I have them at the number four position. And number five, another surprise here, I'm going to go with the Dallas Cowboys. This is a team, Tony Romo can be erratic, but they have some weapons on his team. I think Dez Bryant can be one of the elite receivers in the game. You still have Jason Witten, you still have Miles Austin, you still have DeMarco Murray. And I think what you're going to see on defense here, Monty Kiffin is going to put together a solid unit with this Cowboys team as well.
Cowboys game, that was a very interesting game because it seemed like the Giants kept trying to give that game away and the Cowboys didn't want to take it. They finally seized the opportunity. But looks like Robert's won a lot of love. So what are your thoughts? Call into the show, 424-243-9519. Very, very nice. I like the top five. I'm not going to comment on that just yet, but, you know, as always, it's good to hear some feedback as far as where you think. We're definitely going to keep it going. We're going to talk about some other things, too. I definitely just wanted to talk briefly. I know we got to talk about some predictions as far as that, too. And good game to the Saints, man. I always feel like we were always put in a tough scenario going into the Superdome. Right whenever Sean Payton's coming back, the first game of the season, man, that was rough. But I was happy the way that the Falcons played. And it is such a fierce rivalry that you get a lot of emotional stakes on both sides of the equation there. So I thought we played well. Came down to a couple plays, as it always comes down to. And, you know, I just want to throw that out there, too, because I know some fans get, like, the situation where we're being owned by Sean Payton because he's pretty much owned us the past couple of years. And I do think we could have won that game. So, you know, at the end of the day, you know, I think it wasn't as bad as if we were playing the Katrina game because that was just no win for us. But, you know, good game, Rob. And I'm a big enough fan to say that, too. So there you go.
Well, you know, when the two teams over the last few years, every time they play, the games come down to the wire. And so it just seems as though it comes down to the very last possession, and it did once again. So definitely, I think across the country still is not very aware of the rivalry like we are, but I think it's definitely, if not the best, one of the best rivalries in the NFL. The two teams hate each other. The fan bases hate each other. It's amazing.
How are we able to host a show together, I don't know. But we put it aside for 2 weeks out of the year, I guess. But and then Rob still has fun posting, but that's all good. We'll keep moving. Let's talk more or less about some predictions coming up for this week. And I also want to get your thoughts because Sexy Rexy and the Jets kept the biggest secret, you know, alive that Geno Smith is going to start next week. want to get your thoughts on his performance. As we talk about the Jets at the Patriots, what do you think about this? Do you think Geno's going to have enough or not? I mean, I'm predicting that the Patriots are going to win because I think that the Patriots do a great job as far as confusing young quarterbacks, so Geno is going to struggle, but got to give him some props. He's able to pull it out, even though Levante David for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers made a pretty dumb decision that allowed them to win that game. But what are your thoughts on this first one, Jets at the Patriots?
Well, I thought Geno Smith was solid. Obviously not great. He's a rookie QB. I think he had one INT. But I thought he was solid. I thought his performance was solid. And I can definitely see he has a future in this league as being a starting QB. So I'm going to give him, you know, a B grade based on his performance. But he will not beat the Patriots this week. I'm going to pick the Patriots to win this game over the New York Jets.
I had a question for you because I think earlier we were thinking that we said that Geno Smith was a quarterback for the future, but not right now. Is that kind of changing? Do you think he can be the quarterback right now and kind of grow in that in that role?
I think at this point the Jets need to turn the machine over to him and let him grow with it. The Sanchez obviously is not working, so I think it's time to grow with Geno Smith. Let him develop. And obviously this is not a team that's going to make the playoffs this year, the Jets. At least I don't think so. But this is time for him to learn and grow and, you know, see what they can do in another year or two. And he's a downfield thrower, too. So the Jets has got to get some weapons who can get down the field because that's Geno Smith's strength is the vertical passing game.
Very great observation, Rob. Good job.
Well, I think Mark Sanchez is more of a West Coast offense guy.
Yeah. Good observation. Yeah, I mean, you got to get that running game going. They've got a pretty good offensive line, so they have to kind of adapt too. So we'll see. And if not, then I don't think Coach Ryan will be coaching there next year. Let's move to the second game, Rob. The Miami Dolphins at the Indianapolis Colts. A couple things I want to talk about in that Andrew Luck, man, has just been playing like out of his mind. Robert Griffin, Colin Kaepernick, they're getting, like, a lot of love. But Andrew Luck is solidly putting together he's been, you know, doing his thing. So I like the Colts in this particular game. We can kind of talk about the Dolphins and Tannehill. Like you said, they added Mike Wallace. They didn't really utilize Mike Wallace, so I don't think he was happy with that. But I think the Colts are a solid team. They're going to be able to pull this one out at home.
I like the Colts in this matchup, too, but I do think the Dolphins are much improved. And I think Mike Wallace needs to shut his mouth up if they won the ball game. Now, if you want to talk a little bit about not getting enough passes thrown your way, maybe in the loss, I can deal with that a little bit. But, hey, you won the game, shut your mouth, come back and get better for the next week. But I like the Colts in this matchup at home, too. Andrew Luck was phenomenal this past weekend, even though the Raiders got back in the game and hung tough. I like the Colts to pull this one out, too.
I like the fire. Good job. Rob is bringing it tonight. Wow. Let's talk about Dallas at KC. Now, this is one of these matchups in that I don't think that Kansas City is going to give the ball up as much as the Giants did. This is one of these games, Rob, that can go either way. I feel like I'm picking all my home teams, but I'm going to keep it going again, Rob. I do like KC only slightly because of the fact that they're at home, because they've got a really good home field advantage. I can see Dallas kind of pulling out with a very close game. I don't trust Tony Romo, but that's just me. So I'm curious to hear your predictions on this one.
I like Kansas City in this one. I know, several previous episodes of 12-Man Sports here, I've mentioned I think the Chiefs got a strong chance to get in the playoffs as a wild card, and I still believe that. If you look at the team's roster, they have a lot of talent. And I think Andy Reid, Alex Smith has brought some stability to the organization. And I like them to win this game. I think it's going to be a close one. I'm thinking about a 3-7-point victory, but I like Kansas City to win and get to 2-0.
Keep it moving. A very, very improved Tennessee team. They're going to Houston, the Texans. And the Texans, it took them a while to kind of get their legs underneath them as well. And I'm going to preface this with two things. And there's a couple teams that you got to wonder as far as quarterback play. And Matt Schaub, they have so much talent, the Houston Texans. Their defense is phenomenal. But I'm starting to question Matt Schaub at the helm right now. I mean, is he the guy to kind of get them to the next level? But in this instance, I got him in my top five. I got to go with him. I don't know if Jake Locker is just prepared for that defense. If you have an experienced guy like Phillip Rivers struggling, I like Houston in this particular matchup at home.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Houston, but I think it's going to be closer than the experts think. I think this Tennessee team is much improved, and you can see that old Greg Williams has brought some nastiness to that defense in Tennessee. And you can see that this team is playing a lot more physical, and you can see the development of Jake Locker. He's improving game by game, but I still like Houston to win the game.
Good job. Keeping it moving as we get ready to wrap up the show. Let's talk about San Francisco at Seattle. We are saving the best for last. Man. This is one of those games that, this is what we're waiting for early in the season. I think the NFL did a great job, Rob, of scheduling these great matches out of the box, with the fact that, Falcons, Saints, Packers, 49ers, Giants, Giants, Cowboys, Redskins, Eagles, just a great start for the NFL season. I'm going to let you have the first crack at this. Who do you think is going to pull this one out?
Well, my take on this one is I think Seattle is going to struggle this year offensively. No Percy Harvin. I think they're going to struggle scoring points. Just my observation. I could be wrong here. And that's the only reason why I don't have them in the top five right now. They're going to have to win games with their defense. They're going to have to put heat on the quarterback, which they're very capable of doing. I think the 49ers is the better team of the two. But I'm going to take the Seahawks in this game just because they're at home, and I'm going to take them in like a 3-point victory. But I think at season's end, the 49ers will have a better record and a better team, but I'm going to take Seattle winning this one in a nail-biter at home.
We are on the exact same page, Rob, and the only reason why I say that, only because of that for my 49er fans out there, is that home field advantage that Seattle has. I can see the 49ers kind of, a certain turnover has to happen for that to take place. But that's what I have as far as that. I know we're getting ready to wrap up the show. We've got about a minute, so I kind of let that kind of go a little longer. But give big shout-outs to everyone that's in our fantasy sports league. Marcy P, she's doing her thing. She's in second place. Good job for her. But let's kind of set up the OT portion if you want to kind of jump into that for a little while, Rob, as well as for next week, and we apologize. We had so much good information to talk about. We still got to talk about college football, other things as well, sir.
Yeah, I know we're getting ready to go to our OT portion. Unfortunately, you can't listen to that live, but if you have a moment on tomorrow, driving home on your lunch break, click on the same link and you can listen to our OT portion. Our OT portion will mainly be strictly college football. We got some predictions for some of the big games coming up this weekend. An OT portion may not be as long, so it'll be some good information for you all. As well as join us next week, same time, be next Tuesday night, 11 Eastern, 10 Central. Once again, we'll be recapping this upcoming weekend in college and NFL and previewing the upcoming week, the following week as well. So you don't want to miss us on next Tuesday night, same time, same channel, 11 p.m. Eastern, 10 Central. Good night, people.
tonight, people. Thanks for tuning in, and we are here next week. So don't forget to like our page and as well as follow us on via Twitter. So we'll talk to you guys soon. And with that, we are getting ready to jump into the OT portion of Talking Sports with the 12th Man. And we are moving on, and as you mentioned, Rob, we are going to kind of kick it off with college news and all that fun stuff. So let's kind of jump into it, and let's talk about the Heisman candidates. And who do you think is leading so far? There's been a lot of great play, a lot of interesting, you know, is my guy from Florida State, my quarterback, Jameis Winston, is he going to put his name in the hat too? So who do you think as far as who's leading right now for the Heisman?
Well, right now, I'm going to go with Teddy Bridgewater. Even though I think their schedule has been kind of weak, you know, I'm going to put him as a front runner. He's been very impressive, and I want to see him going against a tougher opponent and see what his numbers like, too. But right now, I think he has been extremely impressive, and I'm going to put Teddy Bridgewater out in front. Jameis Winston, of course, is in the running. I think Aaron Murray for Georgia, as well as Todd Gurley for Georgia, have been two outstanding players so far this year. You know, they lost a game, their first game of the season. So those are just to name a few players. Marcus Mariota of Oregon, you got to put him up there too. But right now I'm going to say Teddy Bridgewater will be number one in my book at the moment.
Yeah, I agree with you as well. I think Teddy Bridgewater is playing phenomenal. I would put Gurley up there more so than Aaron Murray just right now. But that's who I have as far as kind of leading the charge. But you mentioned a lot of good names within the list. We got our tracker there as well. I think we may have a situation with Jadavian. I think earlier, whenever we were trying to make some predictions, that we didn't think he was going to be able to be in that talk just yet. So I'm curious how it's going to play out. He's definitely the number one pick in the NFL draft next year, but he may not be the Heisman Trophy just because of, you know, he may not get the opportunity to impact the game as much as a quarterback in this instance. But like you said, Bridgewater is up there. I can't wait to see how they progress. If you're Jacksonville, you're keeping an eye on him as well because he may end up being your pick. So we'll keep it moving as well, sir. We are going to talk about some next things as far as some coaching news. And there are some interesting things, Rob, if you're a fan of Texas and if you're a fan of USC. We're talking about University of Southern California. But Mack Brown, what's going on with Mack Brown, Rob? You know, first and foremost, he could have had Jameis Winston. We're not going to bring that up again. But right now they just do not look like the team that they should be whenever you're talking about all that talent that's in Texas, Rob. Want to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, I think that was a disappointing loss for them to go on the road to BYU and lose the way they lost. And this was supposed to be a much improved Texas ball club with a lot of starters coming back this year. And so obviously the Texas fan base is pretty irate. And so they're calling for Mack Brown's head. And, you know, I'm not going to – I don't know if he needs to be fired. You know, I'm not sure if I have the answer to that. But I did think about a couple of people who I think possibly would be good candidates to replace him if they did. Well, really one guy I think would be a great candidate to replace him. And I think that's Kevin Sumlin over at Texas A&M. I think Texas is still the number one college football program in the state. And I think Kevin Sumlin has the making of an incredible coach. And I think in the event they get rid of Mack Brown, I think Sumlin will be the perfect hire to move over to Texas and open up that offense and bring some excitement and stability back to that program. And he will be able to get elite recruits to continue to come as well as coach them up. And I think Sumlin will be the great hire for Texas.
Do you think, Rob, that that's going to go over well? Is that their biggest rival, Texas A&M, Texas? And please forgive me if I don't know the answer to that, because is that like, man, you're crossing over? I mean, I know money talks, but would that be almost like you're kind of going from Florida, Georgia, you think? Or how is that as far as in the rivalry world?
Well, it used to be a huge rivalry, but they don't play against each other anymore. And you know, you just, like I said, Texas A&M is a very good football program, but Texas has a lot more resources. Yeah, they are a deep program in the state of Texas. And so it would be a slightly better job for Sumlin to go to a program like Texas where they're getting ready to have their own Longhorn network. And so the resources that they have are incredible.
Yeah, I think slightly better is definitely a little underrated, Rob. I think it's extremely better position for him if he goes to Texas versus Texas A&M. Good move. Let's talk more or less about, you know, Lane Kiffin. You talk about a guy that's just dropped, man. He decided to and I know this is going to sound weird, Rob, but it seems like he was doing better at Tennessee than he is at USC. I know that's kind of weird to say. But, you know, at this juncture, you talk about just the wheels coming off. Their offense was stagnant. This may have something to do a lot with their the band that they had because they're just it seems like they're kind of dropping. And they used to be the cream of the crop in the Pac-12. And, you know, this is kind of good for other teams to kind of make their stake, you know, with Oregon into the world. But, yeah, in this instance, I agree. I don't think he's going to last too much longer, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, you know, Lane Kiffin is a guy that I think is all bark and no bite. You know, he talks a lot, but doesn't quite back it up. And so heck of a recruiter. And, you know, there are a lot of people that feel like the USC got rid of the wrong Kiffin. They should have kept Monty, got rid of Lane. But you know, like I said, I don't know if I have the answer or if it's time to fire him or not. But I did think of a guy who I think will be a good replacement, and I think a guy who will be a great replacement for USC in the event they got rid of Lane Kiffin will be Jack Del Rio. And I went with Jack Del Rio here for one reason. He's a USC alumnus. He loves the program, and he's a defensive coordinator for the Denver Broncos. And you look at Pete Carroll when he was the head coach at USC. You talk about a guy who's been an NFL head coach before. You talk about a guy who's been an NFL defensive coordinator. And Jack Del Rio has that same pedigree, has been an NFL head coach, an NFL defensive coordinator. You're still going to get elite recruits. And he will be able to bring that program back to star, you know, the football program in Los Angeles. And I think he will be a great hire for a USC team. And almost have them operating like an NFL team.
I like that. That's a great, great observation, too, and prediction, Rob, as well. I mean, we've talked about it, all bark, no bite. That's definitely with Lane Kiffin. And I like Jack Del Rio. I think that'd be a fantastic move. You kind of getting it switched up, too. Maybe they become more defensive-oriented. If you're Jack Del Rio, you grab a good offensive guy. And you kind of get that you get that school back to where it should be, getting those top recruits, getting those NFL scouts come out there and say, hey, this is kind of the USC that we remember. So Lane, it's kind of like you're taking a Porsche and running it right into the ground, man. So we'll see how that plays out. Let's talk about these college football predictions, and we'll end the show right after we finish up with these predictions. First and foremost, let's talk about the school that's kind of taking a lot of USC's thunder, and that's the number 16-ranked UCLA Bruins going up against the Nebraska Cornhuskers, number 23. Let's talk about this. In this instance, Jim Mora is doing his thing, Rob. He's keeping that train moving. So as much as we're certain fans of certain environments, I do think that USC is going to come in. They're going to do the upset. They're going to go in there. They're going to win at Nebraska. So, curious to hear your thoughts about this.
I agree with you. I think UCLA is a better football team, even though Nebraska's at home. I like UCLA to go into a hostile environment. I think Mara's going to have them ready to play, and I like them to go on the road and win this game.
Let's talk about the next matchup real quick, and, you know, not too many things to kind of jump into, but let's talk about number one Alabama at number six Texas A&M. Johnny Manziel has been in the headlines all offseason, and I think someone's done a fantastic job because I know it takes Johnny Manziel plays, he's kind of an emotional player, Robbie, plays with his heart on his sleeve. You want to let him do that, but you want to control that as well. You don't want to get too far. So, you know, this was an opportunity for Alabama to kind of get back on Texas A&M. I think they're going to get back, too. They're going to win. Nebraska's been, like, waiting for this opportunity, and they're going to handle business, I believe, without a doubt.
So you're going with Alabama. This is a game, and I'll tell you what, I've gone back and forth on, gone over all kind of analysis on matchups and things of that nature. And, you know, for the most part, I thought Alabama will win this, but I've kind of got a change of heart here. I think, you know, one of the things that concerns me about Alabama is their secondary is not as strong as it has been in years past. And and I think that's where Texas A&M might be able to exploit them a little bit. And I think the game is going to be extremely close. And I look for Texas A&M to win this game by 3 to 6 points.
Wow. All right. This is interesting. This is the only one that we kind of differ in. But, okay. I definitely respect your opinion. I didn't have any more in this particular. Did you have any more you wanted to highlight before we wrap up or anything you wanted to talk about before we get ready to wrap up another edition of Talking Sports for the 12th Man, sir?
We just encourage all of our listeners once again to like us on Facebook, Talking Sports with the 12th Man. Follow us at Twitter, at 12th Man Sports, I'm sorry, at 12th Man Sports. Follow us on Twitter. Join us next Tuesday night, 11 Eastern, 10 Central, 8 Pacific, 5 p.m. Hawaii. And we got some more great football action to talk about on next week's show. Any other closing remarks, Dr. Dre?
Yes, sir. Just going to piggyback on what you said. Just look forward to that. We're going to talk about the week two of the NFL, a lot of great matchups that we're going to have. And then just kind of recap some college football stuff, too. Anything that's big in the news, give us a heads up. I know that we're jumping into the baseball's kind of wrapping up at the playoffs, too. But we'll keep it going on the football front. So keep those requests coming. Other than that, we'll talk to you guys next week. Thanks, Rob, for a great show. We'll talk to you soon, sir.
Good night, people.
Night, people.